This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Tuning into the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans. Producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows. Interviewing celebrities and showrunners. And bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Hey there, Mad Men fans. Welcome back to the Mad Men After Show here on AfterBuzz TV, talking about Season 7, Episode 13, The Milk and Honey Route. I'm Matt Lieberman. Joining me, finally, I think, for the first time this season,
first
the whole
time.
Panel is here. Sterling Cates is here.
Hello.
Mr. Joe Braswell.
I'm here.
And Joe Sanfilippo.
Nice to be here with you guys.
Yes, just in time for the penultimate episode of the entire series. Last week was the anti-penultimate. This is the penultimate episode. And what a great piece of television. A lot of people are intensely debating the quality of this episode, largely based on how much, when they're watching a show, how much does it matter to them that the ending be something that they like and not what the creator wants? I think a lot of people were frustrated with the meandering nature of Don's story this week, but the important beats that it brought out and the active changes that it provided, I think, made it worthwhile.
It's interesting to me that we have been in his capable hands for how many seasons now? We have all agreed collectively this is probably the best show that's ever been on television, and somehow or another there are a certain percentage of people that don't trust him to end it.
Well,
it's very strange to me. It's like this we've been in the hands of I think probably the best television artist the world that we've ever seen. I don't think that's
slow
high. I don't
just
think
somebody
that's
likes hyperbole.
Slow down, everybody.
I mean it's let's be real. This is it. Have you seen a better show than this?
Depends on what you're calling
better.
My two cents, this is probably the best piece of television I've ever seen. And I completely trust that whatever the ending is going to be, it's going to be brilliant. And I have no desire to second guess him. It just doesn't make sense.
Two words: Family Matters. Urkel. I agree with you.
I
agree with you. I think that, like, you know, we're just in this mode because when it comes to like these series, Matt and I were talking about this off air. Like, you put so much equity, so much like of your time into
seven plus
years and seasons. Everyone has their own idea of how this story should end, and we're also conditioned through all these shows for things to end with a bang. I mean, this isn't Breaking Bad.
Right.
We're not ramping up to something big. I mean, penultimate episodes are usually used to sort of set up this grand big boom. Mm-hmm. And this isn't that show. It never was that show.
Right.
It never was that show. So relax, everybody.
Yeah. It was Sterling?
I don't think there's going to be any sort of crazy twist. It's the hardest show to predict ever. But I think it's going to be a great story no matter what. I'm not, you know, I was reading all the predictions online, but at the end of the day, it's going to be whatever Weiner wants to do with it, and we can't really change that.
So. Yeah. The fact is, whether we're happy with it or not, whatever ending he chooses will be the correct ending for this story. As somebody who crafted it so incredibly deliberately and had such intense control over the whole thing over so many years, over, what is it now, 9 years?
Mm-hmm.
Seven seasons, one of them broken out over two years, 1 year missed entirely.
Yep.
The fact is, it's going to be whatever it's going to be. I think that this episode was incredibly effective at closing out two stories, giving us some important story beats that, you know, we've wanted for a long time. And, you know, next week's episode, I'm banking on a time jump. I don't know how you're going to achieve, how are you going to close out this story in the next month or so of Don Draper's life. I just don't.
I hope you don't get a time jump, because I feel like we've got some closure just about all of our characters. I mean, even you can even make the argument that that wonderful walk down the hallway of Peggy's was pretty close.
And yeah, to me, that's the potentially that's the end of her character. I'm okay with that being the end of her story.
Right.
As much as I'd like to see her and Don together again, but
I think we've got ends for everyone. If we see whatever this end for Don is, I would like to see how he gets there. I don't want to see him arriving. I don't want to see like a jump and he's wherever he is, and then we start from there. I would love to see his moment from that bus stop to wherever he's going to be. I mean, there's been all kinds of analogies to the Odyssey with this, and you know, he's on this sort of like, I don't know, vision, like this walkabout through a Norman Rockwell painting or whatever he's doing like in life now. But like, you know, Homer, like in the Odyssey, he came home, and so we feel like Don's got to come home. And the question is he going to come home back to the advertising world? Is he going to come home back to family?
Or is he going to come home to California, which is where Don Draper was born? Don Draper belongs. It's where he's been journeying this whole time before this grand detour.
Right. He's got to somewhere climb to the top of this building so he can jump out and fall from the...
No.
He's not
going
like to do that. Open. I did not see that happening.
No jump. All right. We're going to talk about Don third. I want to talk about Pete, who has come so far. Remember slimy, skeevy, cheating on his fiance Pete from episode one, and the man who he has become today?
Yeah.
It's such an incredible transformation, and I think no scene speaks to it more than the scene between him and his brother at the bar.
Yeah.
When he's skipping out on this this second interview set up by Duck, who tricked him into going to a job interview in the first place for Learjet, who we know becomes an incredibly huge and successful company.
Yeah.
And he realizes that his brother is skipping out on him to go have sex with some woman, even though he's married. And he poo-poos it, and he's like, why do we do that? Why do we want to do that? And I love the simple answer,
because our dad did.
Yeah.
And I saw the way women looked at him.
Yeah.
That was a fantastic, I agree, that was a fantastic scene.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just, in getting into Pete's character, getting to the family, getting to sort of like the reasons why, you know, men sometimes do what they do. And it's really illuminating in a lot of ways. I loved it.
It speaks to all of us on a real basic level. Because who can you be more real with than your brother? I mean, there's no one, you know, you grew up together, so there's no reason to fake it. It's your brother. So, I mean, I thought that was really cool. I thought that was very honest and very real. And why do we bother doing this? Why? Mm-hmm. What's the point? But it does speak to the whole culture. I mean, the whole culture of go and get it, show off that you have it. That'll get you access to these girls. I mean, because let's be honest, the brother's ugly as hell. And if he's getting any, it's not because he's
physical appearance with you always.
I'm just saying. That casting is deliberate.
Five, six, what is
that casting is deliberate, and it's to show that he's not getting any because he's like rolling up at the club and he's Joey Handsome. No, he's getting it because he's got money or he's got status. And I think that's why it speaks to the entire culture collectively.
Joey Handsome?
That was actually a terrible choice of words.
Sterling, how'd you feel about this, Sterling?
Well, I've been wanting Pete to get back with Trudy for a while, and I'm hoping that he would reach this transformation that he seems to be at. So I hope in the last episode it doesn't all blow up. The only picture they've released of next episode is Pete's. It's Pete, so I don't think he's done.
Oh, I didn't see that picture at all.
It's the only picture that AMC has put out, and it's just Pete's face. So that doesn't give us anything. So it could be from a long time ago, but you never know.
Oh, wow.
I got to say, props to my man Mark Moses, Duck.
Yeah.
For come back and just like, I mean, that was just a great
skip
everything.
A beat. Yeah.
Skip a beat. He's a little drunk. He's doing his thing and like fresh off Homeland. Like, it was good to see Duck Phillips.
Well,
back
that's
in
the
action.
Beauty of this show. And it's the thing that people who don't understand it get upset about. It's just that people don't change on this show. Because in life, people don't really change.
Right.
You try and you move in just little increments or you get more or less depressed. But really, at your nature, you're still the same. And this is a guy who fell off the wagon now 7 years ago and never got back on.
Nah.
Is still outrunning his demons, you know, one paycheck at a time.
Yeah.
Just has to close one deal, and then he'll be set through the winter.
Get me through the winter. That was the most grim line I've ever heard.
It was really grim, and it was really sad. But I tell you what, Duck is really good at what he does.
Mm-hmm. Mm,
Duck, man, even in a drunken haze, he's like the chess master, like putting it all together.
He knew. Yeah. He knew that Pete would be a perfect fit for Learjet.
You don't even know you want this yet. Let me show you.
And in that perfect, very perfect last line, like with a poignant line at the end where way where the, sort of maybe the game-changing line where he says, you know, I've been there, you know, like this yeah. thing to Pete. Like, it's like, and Doug had, Doug's been to the top. Doug was the guy.
He's the guy.
And it's sort of like, look at him now. And it's like, what are you waiting for, Pete? Like, mm-hmm. what are you doing?
Yeah.
I doubt he was there to replace Don in the first place when in the elevator. I feel like
no,
that was just
a setup. Yeah, it was all set up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's all a big con.
No, he was waiting for Pete
yeah. to get on that elevator,
come in the building, and then he followed him inside.
Yeah,
yeah.
Duck, man, Duck's working.
Duck's working. But the scene between him and Trudy, all of the scenes between the two of them, and last week we were talking about how we wanted them to get back together, and yep. how we were predicting that a reconciliation was on the horizon, and I couldn't be more. It was giving me chills yeah. watching him say, you know, I never loved anybody else in my entire life. It's only yeah. you. I said it to you 10 years ago, and I'll say it again. I do. And I'm like, oh, God damn you, romantic Pete. I never thought I'd see romantic Pete.
How did Pete become one of my favorite characters? Right? I have no idea.
Yeah. I agree.
And
he's totally, he's had a triumphant season.
But at the same time, I was rooting for Trudy when she was like, basically, F you.
Right.
Why on earth would I ever let you hurt me again? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, you're right, girl. You're right.
Yeah. And then, you're right.
And then,
you're right.
You're right.
You're right.
You tell him, girl. and then he says, I do. And I'm just like, oh, kiss him. And then they do. And I'm like, oh, I'm so excited for these
but
two.
But it's not like she was living the life either. I mean, she wasn't having that much fun.
No, she's unhappy.
Yeah,
Pop-Con.
She's been complaining that she can't make any friends because the husbands all want to hook it up. And, you know, I mean, she's in she's been in divorced widow, I'm
purgatory.
Sorry, divorced lady purgatory. And so, yeah.
But what was the line she said? I mean, I think it sticks again for Trudy. Like, she was sticking to her guns. And
yeah,
line.
I want to turn the lights off.
But what did she say? Like, I envy your ability to be sentimental.
Yeah, to yeah. view everything sentimentally. Well, I see everything
yeah,
as it was.
Yeah, that was a stone cold like FU, mm-hmm. you know. And I loved it. But props to Pete, man. He gave that full blown Nicholas Sparks speech right there.
He said, "Say it instead of with just your eyes."
Yeah,
say
it. Yeah, that was the line. Oh, and Matthew, whoever wrote that, Matthew Weiner wrote this in a
memoir. Yeah, he wrote it, directed it.
But
yeah.
that was on some Nora Ephron, Nicholas Sparks shit right there.
That was the line. Right there.
I usually don't fall for that stuff, but I was like, you know, reaching for the Kleenex.
Yeah, for me, I was like, oh dang, yeah. I don't know what I would do.
Let's go. I'll go on that jet with you.
Maybe my eyes were saying.
Well, I'll forget that hairline
yeah.
for a second.
Hey, man.
That's grim.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm so happy for these two, and I hope that nothing bad happens. We got some thoughts here from our executive producer, Kevin Undergaro.
Kevin!
Who asked that we read them on the show, and he says, Pete reconciles with his wife on a deal set up by the shady and unstable suit, hoping this works out that one of our mad men is redeemed, but really scared for the other shoe to drop. I don't see that happening. We need some happy endings here, and I feel like Pete, as a reward for learning how to be a good person, gets his.
So he's the morality play. Pete's the morality play of the
yeah.
show.
I mean, I hate, like, you know, going all internet on this chat room, comment room.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of chatter on the internet about, like, you know, well, you know, Pete is just going to end up cheating on her in 9 months. Or, you know, they're going to end up back in Manhattan or whatever. Or, you know.
But we only have an hour left of the show.
Well, I know. But this is the thing. Like, and this is one of my ex-colleagues in Grantland pointed out. Chris Ryan, he's talking about how noted that Pete's parents both died in bizarre travel accidents.
Oh, boy.
Like, his dad died in a plane crash.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
his mom died in a weird, like, you know, cruise ship accident.
Yeah.
So dad died in a plane crash. All this talk about dad, and they jump on that Learjet.
Oh, and I read something today that there
Wouldn't
was a,
crash.
The in Wichita.
This show is not
in Wichita
that
there
way.
Was a plane crash in October of 1970.
Yeah.
And where like all the Wichita State football players died and 16
oh,
others.
Oh no.
And the same date.
Marshall.
And they're moving to Wichita.
Well,
it was just,
Marshall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh no.
It's all this so like plane crash.
What if they moved to Wichita and he
I'm
gets
going
in plane
to
crash?
Wichita.
Oh, no. Not a huge endorsement for the Learjet Corporation, but you know, I don't know. So, but I like that. What I do like about that is I think that this is their ending, or this is we'd like at least this is something we can aspire to. And then when the show's over, we can make our own ending. Like, oh, that plane probably crashed, or they're in Manhattan, yeah. or who knows, or maybe they're happy. That's what's beautiful about it. Just like you know, Matthew Weiner's mentor,
yeah.
David Chase did in The Sopranos. You know, with the black, it's like, what do you have your own ending out there?
Yeah,
please don't do that with this.
The fact
well,
is,
that's his boy. That's
yeah,
his guy.
Yeah. again. It's his fearless leader.
I don't want that.
Well. The fact is,
you don't get to choose. We just established you don't get to choose.
I know.
In life, you can have your happy ending and still die painfully. Like, this is, to me, the moment. This is the end of his story. If something terrible happens to him after this, he earned the happy years that he had, and I feel like the Pete in this episode would work as hard as he could to preserve it as long as he could. I don't think if his marriage ends again, it won't be because he cheated. Maybe they'll just stay together till Tammy's old enough to go off to college and they'll get divorced because they're like, ultimately, it just doesn't work out. But
I don't think he'll ever know.
I have a feeling.
We don't want
it sounds like a good segue into Betty, the dying painfully and having a...
Yes. Well, we'll get to that in a moment. First things first, we need to talk about iTunes. Your favorite part of the show. Don't you dare fast forward. Don't you dare skip ahead. And you know why. Because this part of the show and what you
do
is
my favorite part of the show.
When you go to iTunes and you rate and review this show, when you go to YouTube and you subscribe to this channel and upvote, hit that like button.
No one.
You are helping this channel stay alive. You are helping us get sponsors that pay for this, that keep our doors open, our lights on, pay our wonderful engineers. And it's also the best way for us to know that we are giving you the finest possible Mad Men product on the market. And remember, next week is the season finale. So writing in this week, writing your ratings and reviews week, this is your last chance to have them read out on the show and to have your thoughts
after this,
shared.
You're just howling in the wind.
Exactly. 5 stars, awesome, from Mary Joy. This After Show podcast is one of the many things I will miss about this brilliant, brilliant show. This panel has incredible insight and the conversation is great. I will say I immediately await the posting of this podcast, especially when a lot of stuff has gone down in this episode. I can't wait for them to talk about most recently Joan versus the Men at McCann. Worth the wait. You all are awesome. Excellent recap show by P. Brew. 5 stars. Well done. I look forward to hearing their take immediately after watching an episode. Highly recommend. Angie Jones, 5 star. All I have to say is dope.
Nice. Yeah. That's a good one.
How I Learned What Happened, 5 stars from DE in Wyoming. I quit cable, so I only get a few TV channels and no AMC. AfterBuzz is how I learn about what happened each week on Mad Men. Your descriptions and plot analyses keep me up to date on the show, and I can visualize what happened. Thanks for being my eyes and ears for this show. Recommendation, iTunes or Amazon Prime or AMC.com.
Maybe we should say things that don't actually happen and see if we get in comments.
Oh, just for this one person?
Yeah,
I don't want to throw it in there. Full Delaware and
Wyoming. Remember when the dog came in?
Five stars. Terrific by Namzi. I love your podcast. Listening to it after each show gives me more appreciation of Mad Men, a show that I already loved. But you bring in so many details that I missed that I want to watch each episode again after listening because now I understand it at a much deeper level. Thanks so much for your thoughtful and thought-provoking thoughts. A lot of thoughts in there.
Great
podcast. 5 stars from the Brian W84, the greatest Mad Men podcast out there. I only wish I would have found them earlier in the series. I definitely recommend listening to their other podcast. Excellent analysis from the hosts. 5 stars from Jay Shishkishki. Just started watching here at the end. We'll go back to the after shows from season 5 on. The hosts have an excellent grasp of the characters, but also peerless understanding of the lead women characters on the show. I wish the show would go back to season 1 as the rest of us mourn the ending of the show by watching it all over again. Great job. Great insight. 5 stars from Rob 8641. The show provides great background information and insight to each episode. I look forward to listening each week. The Windows on 5th Avenue. 5 stars from Akash Kadabra. Only one more after this. I love this podcast. Mad Men is one of my favorite dramas of all time, and as a writer, my appreciation for it only grows as time passes and all of the narrative threads come together. The hosts have a working knowledge of not just the show, but the history and joining literature, and I thusly appreciate their unique viewpoints even more. Thanks for the journey to the end. And finally, it's the people, not the job. 5 stars from Barn. Oh my God, this is so long. So I'm just going to say thank you, Barn. I wish that we had enough time to read your whole thing, but thank you.
Can I just very quickly, just while we're here, just shout out to a few people on who are watching right now
live. Of course, yes.
Of course. Matt H., Agent Dale Chomsky, William Bangs, McCut 1217, John Miller, Bridget Shea Wardstone, Burdock, Finney, Philip, I can't pronounce that, Gabriel, Bow Woman, and, I don't know, Koi. All you guys, thank you so much for checking us out now in real time. I just said hi. Hey, Joe. Hey, Ryan. Hey, Ren. Look at this.
Hey, guys.
Super meta.
I'm not yet.
Anyway.
That is hot.
I feel like we're going in circles right now.
Yeah, she's looking at it too. Okay, here we go.
Okay,
back to real time.
Back to Betty.
We're at now. What happened then? We passed
or the dare I say, Mrs. Robinson?
Yes.
Which hysterical?
That was pretty funny.
Hysterical. Those kids. Those guys have a sense of humor. They're fun boys. She finds out this week that she has lung cancer and it's metastasized to her bones. And now she has cancer of the bones as well. She has less than a year to live. She'll be dying very soon. It's intense. It's difficult. Again, showing just the period and how frustrating this is. And especially when you're thinking about Betty, who is somebody who has always wanted the limelight and has always liked being noticed and liked being treated well and likes being the center of attention. When the cancer diagnosis is being explained, this doctor is talking to her husband.
Right.
And
yeah.
She's right there. They're talking about her as if she's not even there.
Yeah, it's a bit of a callback to, I think it was like season two.
When she went to the psychologist
exactly.
And they reported back to Don.
They were reporting to Don and sitting there. And that was interesting.
Yeah, back in season one. And she doesn't want to fight it. She doesn't want to try to live longer. Henry is a complete mess. And he doesn't know how to handle it, and he doesn't know how to handle her. Mm-hmm. To the point that he goes and grabs Sally from school and breaks Betty's trust and tells her what's going on. And I loved Sally's reaction. Like, before he can even finish getting the words out of his mouth, she's got her hands over her ears. She's not ready to hear this.
My ears are ringing. I don't understand what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. So, this was a really emotional storyline for me, especially when Sally reads the letter towards the end.
Yes,
I was
letter.
A wreck. I couldn't even, like, see the TV. I was like, no.
Yeah.
But I think that Betty, I see this a lot in this episode especially, is stronger than I know I have given her credit for. Mm-hmm. And she's definitely been, you know, one who cares a lot about her appearance and how she looks. And even in the letter, she says, you know, how I like my hair, make sure they do it right. And so if she's going to be struggling for 9 months and, you know, she can go on with the treatments, but she knows it probably won't work. And she doesn't want to be viewed as weak or, you know, or anyone to see her not in tip-top shape.
Well,
so, I mean, you can't really... And she has that control over the situation, and she hasn't really had control over anything, ever.
You get to choose. You're 100% right. And if you're in a position to choose how you want to go... You know, I read a statistic that said 70% of doctors decline chemotherapy, that decline any kind of cancer treatment when they know that the outcome is terminal, because they know exactly what the life is going to be in the interim. And most of them say no, there's no point. So, and I think that's interesting, because that is, you are choosing how to spend your last, and you're 100% right. She has had so little control over so few things that is something she's going to take control of, and she's absolutely going to take control of it all the way to the end. Here's exactly what I want to be in. I want to be in this dress. I want to be interred here, intact. No embalming. Don't have them take my stuff out. Mm-hmm. This is where I want to be.
How I want to be remembered.
Yeah. And that's it. I don't want you to remember me sick. I don't remember. That's all in there in the subtext. You don't want you to remember me any other way.
I got to tell you, this scene, like, you know, I'm with you, Sterling, it just completely just ripped me apart. Mm-hmm. I mean, not the scene. I mean, that whole storyline.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
I mean, Betty with the big casino, like, is not what you want to see. And you know, you're reminded in that moment, not only just. You know, the mortality of these characters you spend so much time with. So, like, there's a certain finality to, like, oh, we're ramping towards the end of this. But, like, to actually have it end with someone being, like, diagnosed with a terminal disease, it's not like she died unexpectedly, which is what we expect from television shows.
Right.
But it was like it gave us time to sort of really reflect on, with Betty, like, on what she had, her relationship with Don, about, like, oh, they just saw each other, the relationship with Sally. The dignity in which she sort of handled the whole situation, seeing how Henry, you know, in his own way, tried to handle it. That scene about, you know, what would Rockefeller do?
And she's like, he would die.
Yeah, that was all just man, really great acting, and it was great to see January Jones get something really good to do, you know, in terms of acting. I thought she was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And echoing what you said, the scene with Sally was fantastic. But yeah, that end scene, the letter.
Oh my God!
The letter just broke me down.
I can't even think about it right now. I was tearing up.
But what I can't figure out is, did she say, read this when I'm gone?
Yes.
Read it when I'm gone. She opened it.
So she opened it early.
We see her at the end walking up the steps, and she kind of is having a hard time.
Right. The steps are very symbolic, too.
Not when I'm gone from the room, Sally. But it's something to, like, how capable of that exchange, like, look, Henry's going to be a mess. Like, you have to do this. And so that, like, her passing that on to Sally, who is absolutely capable of doing that. And it was just lovely and beautiful and sad and everything.
But it's really, also... Oh, go ahead.
I really enjoyed how they kind of made it real clear the futility of all this. I mean, this is all, it's a little bit of a downer. I walked away from that episode very, very, very depressed. The whole thing.
It's also 1970.
Today, it's the same thing. It doesn't really matter. None of us are getting out of here alive. And it was interesting. What would Rockefeller do? Speak for yourself. Stop. I ain't leaving. But what would Rockefeller do? He would die. Right. And it was interesting that scene in the car outside the hospital. Henry's, I'm going to call this guy, and I'm going to call that guy, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that. And it's not going to matter. There is nothing you can do to get out of this. And I think there's such a finality to that. And it's something that we don't really deal with as much in TV, because a lot of us live in La La Land. We don't want to, like, face the reality. This is happening to everybody. And I like the way the show really did that. Like, there is no way out. This character's going to go.
Sure.
And she, the best we can do for her, she gets to choose how she's going to go. I also like structurally how what he's doing structurally with the storyline, how he's keeping Don is grounded now. Don cannot run away willy-nilly, because if Betty's gone, then who is raising his kids?
You mean Henry?
No, I mean Don.
Don is grounded?
As a character, I think this grounds him. Once he finds out that she's gone, now he has to choose. Now, right now, he's choosing to run around and do what he's going to do with the understanding that someone's taking care of his kids. But when Betty's gone, he can't be, is it D.B. Sweeney that everybody thinks he's going to be? He can't, that's not a possible.
D.B. Cooper.
D.B. Cooper, pardon me. Sweeney. Yeah, pardon me. D.B. Cooper.
Wackadoo theory.
But he can't do that. That's not possible now. Does that make sense? Structurally, that brings him back down, I think.
I mean, I hear what you're saying. I'm not so sure about that.
I don't necessarily think so either. It all depends, because we don't know how long Betty has to live, and we don't know. They have no way of contacting him. It's really not until he calls Sally again that he's going to hear about this. So I'm not sure what effect it'll have.
And by the way, he's calling Sally at school, where she's not.
Next week. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I ask you one question that we stole from Betty? Like, when we saw her ascend that stairwell, sort of metaphorically and sort of in real life, which is great, is that the last we're going to see of Betty? You think that was like her exit?
100%.
Like her ascension to heaven?
Yeah. It's very, very clearly, to me, it's her climbing the stairs to heaven. It's the last time that we see her. But I think that her letting Sally know that she does love her and does on some level respect who she is, that is the last word that we needed to have on Betty.
Right. Yeah.
That she saying, no, I'm not weak. I am a fighter, but I'm also a realist, and I know when a fight is over, and I'm going to choose how I go out of this world, and I want you to know that you're going to be okay and that I love you. That's all we need to hear.
And she said, I love you, which she did not say when she dropped the letter off.
No.
Grim. Go back to sleep.
Yeah. But at least she got to love you in a letter, which is
right.
You know.
Yeah. Also, I just want to say briefly, cancer. The fact is, cancer was something that people knew about, but was not the grim specter that it is today. And I feel like the first time we hear the word cancer is in the first episode of the show, and then we maybe never heard it again. Maybe only a handful of times since, and now coming to the close. Betty, who has smoked for the entire show, has cancer, and I think it's very important and very significant that that it's happening to one of our cast members right now, and that someone goes out because of cancer. We have to have some negative side effects for these cigarettes, guys. It's got to happen.
Well, I got to be Betty. Yeah. Like all these fools are drinking and boozing and smoking, and Betty's the one who gets it.
Not to make a Betty storyline about Don, but I personally, going off what you were saying, Flippo, that I would like to see Don take an opportunity to be a father that he was never really.
Well, now the choice is really him or Henry. I mean, that's our, that's really it.
Well, here, before we go to Don, really quick, one last thing with Betty. She has this line in her final exchange with Henry where he's surprised that she's going to school, and she's like, why did I start going in the first place? Now, Kevin Undergaro, our executive producer, took it as her admitting that school was a sham to begin with. But I disagree. I feel like she's going to school instead of hiding in her home because she started going because she wanted something to do.
I feel like it was she was seeking some sort of fulfillment for her that she never has had. That was what I took from it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree too. I mean, not to disagree with you, Kevin. Sorry, but I agree.
Okay.
She took that weather.
All right. So, Don, out in Oklahoma, car breaks down. Well, even before that, let's talk briefly about his opening dream that opens this episode, this nightmare that he is going to be found out.
Right.
And it's very significant because even though he has all this existential dread, we rarely trace it back through dialogue to the fact that he's leading a double life, that he committed a crime, that he killed a man and took his identity, and that he's been living with that guilt all this time. It's been years since we've touched on it directly.
Sure.
And it was very important to have that open the episode. Then to have him in this scene with the veterans, like there was a lot of like kind of wasted time, maybe. This week, I do want to point out the woman that he sees, and he's almost like someone in the desert seeing a mirage of a cool glass of lemonade. That's almost like how he was looking at this woman.
Yeah.
Only Don is staying in a hotel in Wichita or wherever the heck he's at, and sees the smoking hottest, ridiculously. No.
Married to just this fast love.
I cry false. Kids. I'm sorry. I've been to hotels in the middle of the country.
That girl does not exist.
All right. She's not there. She's never been there.
She had bad timing, Joe.
Joe, what do you want to say?
I just want to say, back to the cops. And I think it was also obviously not just him being found out about, you know, this long-standing Dick Whitman ruse he's been, he's perpetrated on everyone, including himself, but also him to just ditching McCann.
Yeah.
He just, pieced out from McCann. And
from life, from responsibility.
From life. So it's, everyone is sort of, looking for Don Draper, if you will, and I think that was sort of, what his anxiety coming up. Mm-hmm. They're all looking for me. And
yeah.
So that's my take. Mm. I don't know.
Yeah. But it was good to see him, resist the easy drug this week with the woman. Mm-hmm. Granted, he still drinks like a fish, but still, it's you gotta handle your addictions, whatever's killing you the fastest.
Sure, man.
And getting into these horrible relationships was certainly maybe killing him faster than the drink, as fast as that's killing him.
He seemed to get a kick out of that hottie that jumped out of that cake, though.
Oh yeah,
yeah, she was
that was grim.
Oh, come on.
I loved it. I thought it was super funny and interesting.
I'll get her your number. I'll get you taken care of. I'll make you a friend.
Just like these guys in the middle of the country whooping and hooting, hollering at this wonderful, lovely woman who has pear shape. But that's not a. It's just a surprise that she's popping out of the cake. That's all. But I honestly, I love that scene. It's another great splash of color in this show.
It's who we are. That's what I loved. You're 100% right. We are America. This is who we are. Yep. These are the American Legion guys getting together.
And in this small town, this is the one woman who is willing to pop out of cakes for money.
Yeah. That's who it is.
Yeah.
And you got to think that they knew her growing up, too. Well, that's
Henry's granddaughter. They've probably seen her pop out of the cake more than once.
Oh, yeah.
She's popped out of cakes.
She's that move.
Toss that glove from behind the thing. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to talk about Don's relationship with this the maid boy, this little con man. And we got a double dose of grammar last night on TV between him saying... what is it? Anyone versus no one? And then Stannis Baratheon on Game of Thrones saying fewer instead of less enemies.
Right.
which made me really happy because I'm kind of a grammar Nazi. But this young kid who could become a Don Draper himself.
Yeah, he's like a Dick Whitman meets
Spider from
meets like Sal Mineo.
He's like Spider.
Spider from Goodfellas.
You know, I had him as Mr. Ripley. Meets.
Oh, did you?
Ripley meets Spider from Goodfellas.
There you go. We got it. We got there. And Don was reading The Godfather, by the way. That was what he was reading in the Mario Puzo.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that kid, that that was really, 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 some really great stuff in terms of that interaction with him. Mm-hmm. He had that sort of I'm taking this kid under my wing and kind of a fatherly, correcting the grammar, but also, completely on to him. And then obviously, that stuff at the American Legion, when he confronted him, I mean, I have to jump ahead, but when he confronted him and sort of told him, basically your game is busted, you're the worst comment ever, you should go get that money and sort this thing out. and telling him right now, this is not the path you want to go down. Like, you know, this is sort of like, that's a sort of corrective, you know, thing. Like, I know this life. And this kid's like, you're rich. You have it all. You've done it all. Yeah. It's like, yeah, but it's you don't want to do it this way.
Yeah, I'm rich. I have it all. And I'm in a motel in Oklahoma talking to you.
Right, exactly.
Could be
what,
better.
Do you see a family with me? Do you see me happy? No.
Yeah.
But that we could only have gotten to that moment because of the scene in the American Legion
sure.
where... Don finally is given the opportunity to say the words for the first time and be absolved of his guilt. Now, granted, it's a calculated admission. It's not everything. And it's in a place where the admission could genuinely hurt him. These guys who later tuned him up anyway because they thought that he stole their money, you know, could have taken it the very wrong way and have been like, traitor. And
well,
beating the hell out
well,
of him.
He was uneasy there the whole time. Like, he was kind of uneasy to say a word.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
well, he was nervous they would recognize him, the guy that was there, too.
Yeah. He was like, oh, no. Then he's like, I was a lieutenant, which is a lie. Then he did the whole, like, you know, where and when he was there. And then finally, once he threw the closest clear, he started to ease up a little bit and drink. But it was only until that whole, you know, poignant moment of, you know, this, you do what you have to do to survive.
Yeah. Or to get home.
To
that's
get
what
home.
That kept saying.
That's all that matters.
Yeah,
it's the name of the game.
That matters. And that was, I, you know, I was really expecting, like, this in this moment that we finally had of Don Draper saying the words out loud after 9 years or seven seasons, and we finally hear it. Like, I was really expecting more of, like, a Daniel Plainview, like, you know, There Will Be Blood moment, you know, when he's like, you know, I abandoned my boy, that whole song, and There Will Be Blood. I thought it'd be more dramatic, but it was kind of like, yeah, this happened. And it was very much as cleansing.
That's all we needed, though.
But it was very much as, like, as satisfying.
Yes. He is absolved.
What I found really, one of the things I really enjoyed about the scene is the level of drunk that everybody got to. Because you can only get to that level of drunk after years and years of practice. You cannot get there. You'll overshoot it. If you're a young kid and you're trying to get there, you overshoot and you end up puking in the gutter. If you undershoot it, you just get to a smiley place and you go home with your wife. But that is a special level of drunk that you can only get after 20, 30 years of working at it. And I thought they hit it just right.
Yeah.
I thought they absolutely hit that just right. That kind of sour... But grim, determined to stay. It was impressive. I thought that was
excellent. I love the rendition of Over There.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Over There. We're running low on time,
yes.
So I just want to throw out one more like quick hit, and then we're going to talk about the final scene, where there's this scene that kind of doesn't mean anything, where it's the older guy, and he's like, I want you to help me fix this Coke machine.
Yeah.
They want to give me a new one, but I like this one.
Yeah.
And the significance of Coca-Cola and McCann comes to mind.
Uh-huh.
As well as the fact that, you know, if you think about, like, identities, and I know this is a reach, guys, give me a second.
Right.
You know, where, like...
Where are you going?
This is a guy who's at the end of his rope. He could take on another identity, but maybe he likes his old one.
Well, if he'd stayed as Dick Whitman, he would probably be somewhere fixing Coke machines as opposed to selling them.
Right.
As Don Draper.
Yeah.
Well, the Coke thing, again, the internet's on fire with this whole... Like, you know, this whole, like, when he comes back, he's got to come back from this journey. Is he going to come back and be like, you know, I have the new slogan, you know,
Coke is it.
I like to teach the world to sing.
Yeah.
He's the ultimate ad man. And like, that's it.
Like to teach the world to sing.
Like, is it like he comes back, like, I saw every face.
I am gone.
And the key is to make new Coke.
Right. And he wins advertising as Don Draper. Or does he come back and you know, and take Sally to Madrid or whatever. So.
Right.
That's kind of what the internet's buzzing with now, because there's all these hints of, like, he's going to come back with the new Bud Light slogan. He's going to come back with the new, you know, Coke slogan.
He's done with slogans,
so.
People.
Yeah.
Let's get used to it.
He was in advertising.
Here's what I'll say. I don't want to show the time. I think that, like, you know, in season 6 or 7.1, we saw Don could not get away from the game. He was at his happiest when he's, like, banging out tags, and this is all he knew, and he loved it. I think Don really loves that stuff. I think Dan loves creating and doing that. I think that's a part of who he is. He just doesn't like all the stuff that comes with it. I feel like if he can get to a place where he really sort of believes in himself and believes in sort of the creation of, you know, of what he's doing, I think he could be happy. And I don't know. I'm not saying he's going to come back with a Coke slogan, but I don't know that he, like, I hate advertising. I don't know.
So maybe the Godfather's symbolic. If every time I get out, they pull me back
maybe,
in. Is that what you
maybe.
Think?
Maybe. All right. Last scene of the show.
Yes.
Okay. He gives the kid a ride to a bus stop so remote that it doesn't even have have an enclosure over the little bench, and instead of letting the kid out, he tosses him the keys to his caddy, says, don't waste it, essentially, and gets out of the car. Kid drives away, and Don smiles very broadly.
Now, there's two things I want to ask, and there's maybe things I don't know about 1968, 1969. Pink slips in the glove box.
Sure.
There was no need to transfer titles at that time. Apparently, you had the slip, you had the car.
Yeah, pretty much.
So you just whack somebody, take their car. That was how we did it.
We've seen green, like, we're racing for
pinks. We're racing for pinks.
Racing for pink slips.
I get it. All right, that's fine. I'll accept that. I love the symbolism of the car in general. I love that caddy because there is no joy in that car.
Mm-hmm.
It is a gray, slate gray, ugly Cadillac. It is not a good-looking Cadillac. They made prettier cars in that three-year period, I think. I don't think it's particularly good-looking. They had prettier colors. They had better interiors, but they chose...
Oh, it's with physical appearance.
It's just a symbol, I think. They
if that
chose
car
a
popped
car,
out of a cake, you'd make fun of it.
I would
car
laugh.
Six or five.
I'd say that car is a 3.5.
All right.
This is my point. This is a car that has no joy. It's just a status. It's just a status car. And at that time, GM was making cars all on the same platform. You had Oldsmobile, Buick, Chevy, all on the same platform as Cadillac.
Get to the point.
And basically, the only thing you bought was the status. And so he's giving away not just his car, but he's giving away that gray, bleak status symbol. Mm-hmm. Take this. All it is status. I never had any joy in it. It's just a status.
Fair.
Yeah.
Fair. I'll buy it.
He shed the last piece of his life, other than, of course, his money, which a bunch of reviewers are talking about. It's problematic that we don't know how much money he has.
Don't you have anxiety about that?
I have anxiety about it, but it doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter. He left between $1 and $3 million back at McCann. He gave $1 million to Megan.
So where's he at?
So he's got, like, you know, probably a
few $100,000. A few $100,000 at least.
That's a lot. $6 a night in hotel rooms. Like that's a long way.
You can do Kansas up.
Very quick question for you. Like, when he brought back that money, did they know that it was Spider the kid that took it, or did they think that Don took it? That last scene where he's like, "Here's the money," he's like, "Here's your keys," and the kid's like, "Pack, I'm coming with you." I didn't get if.
They never really cleared it up. I don't know.
I don't think it mattered.
It was Don. I don't think it mattered. Okay.
I don't think it mattered. I think the guy was definitely ashamed that they had tuned him up,
right?
And didn't put up a fight when he said he wasn't paying.
Sure.
So I don't know. I think that ultimately the guy realized that maybe they had jumped the gun on blaming him.
Phone book to the grill.
Yeah.
Jill.
Right. Boom.
Any other thoughts on Don giving away this car and why he's smiling at the end?
I just think that he is like. I think that he's really sort of. Like Justin, I think it's just he's cleansed, he's free. Like this, is the last
divesting himself of all of that stuff.
This is sort of
he
why
can go he, anywhere right now.
Yeah, this is sort of why he went on this journey. He's sitting at this bus stop. He's got like he's free. Like he started with the whole Jack Kerouac. You know, was it Jack Kerouac on the road?
Yeah, Jack Kerouac. On the
and
road.
So, like I think that's kind of where he is, and I think that he's finally achieved his happiness, which leads me to believe that he's like, okay, now I can go home.
All right.
So we'll see.
Beautiful. But I do want to say, though, that beautiful freedom, right, that moment that he had, it's not real. He has kids. Mom is dying. That life, that Don Draper life, even if he wants to pretend that it didn't have consequences, it does. Those people are real. They exist. And they need to be taken care of.
Right.
So, I mean, we can say that he's divested himself of Megan with a $1 million check. But he has not divested himself of his children. And those are real people, and they're out there. And he created that as Don Draper. And that's real. That's not going anywhere.
And I don't think he wants to forget them, though. He's calling them. He wants to hear the voice before they go to sleep.
Right.
So I think he might end up going back, or at least take them to California.
Yeah. Something like that. I mean, assuming Henry can't handle it, I don't think Henry's going to, you know, just give up.
That's true.
All right. We got to go into predictions.
Okay.
And now, you're after Buzz TV.
I almost don't even want to predict anything. I just want to see what happens.
Kind of impossible. The one thing I will say is any people who are still thinking Don's going to take a plunge from the top of a building, I think you're going to be sorely disappointed next week because to me, that any him dying next episode, if not of old age or from a freak accident, any dying that was on his fault or was suicide won't happen because it was predicated on the fact that he hadn't reached any level of personal enlightenment and that he couldn't take it anymore. And by the end of this episode, I feel like he's finally reached it, or at least is close, is on his way. Every day things are getting closer. He's getting that much closer. Mm-hmm. So I honestly don't think he's leaping.
Roller coaster.
Yes.
Love like ours.
Yes.
I think that I think for a long time. We sort of felt as an audience like there was going to be some sort of profound consequence for this whole Don Draper Dick Whitman switch. I think that was always looming as like it's going to come back to get him. This whole Dick Whitman thing.
Not that kind of show.
But then at the end, when he had that confession, like that sort of like this is what happened, and we see sort of cleansed of it. I don't think that thing is coming. So I think that I'm saying all that to say, I don't think that he's going to come flying off. I think that this is sort of a cleansing for Don, a sort of a cocoon from a butterfly from a cocoon moment. So I think that he's going to, you know, maybe rise up and I have no idea what to expect next week. I don't know. The only question I have is, will we see the gang all back together in some way, shape, or form? Will we see them all separately, or will we just see Don? Because we have endings for everyone. So how do we get these all people back in the same room?
Roger's funeral?
Betty's funeral.
Would you stop with Roger's funeral, please?
Betty's funeral.
Stop trying to kill people.
Roger's funeral.
Roger's got to die?
Maybe Betty's funeral, they're all there together and they can have that moment.
Oh, yeah, but why would they go to Betty's funeral?
All right, I don't know.
That's Roger's funeral.
You are depressing people.
Sterling's correct.
Right. Your prediction? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I got a prediction. Here's my prediction. Here's the way I see this ending. I see Don at the top of a cliff in Malibu just overlooking the ocean. That's what I see.
Okay.
He's not jumping. He's not going to kill himself. But I just, he's like with the blue in front of him and he's got possibilities.
All right.
And Winer pretty much shot down the whole D.B. Cooper thing on Conan O'Brien. He asked him about it. He asked him, like, what the strangest prediction is. And he was like, I don't want to say anything, but that's probably the strangest one. Yeah. So I don't think that's the cards.
People in the chat room are saying time jump. I don't.
I'm pulling for time jump. I want time jump because at least on Don's end, there isn't a ton of story that we need to see in these next few months. Because he's just made the decision to lead a life without responsibility, without property, without any of that. I want to see what that journey does to him. I don't want to see him start the journey because we just saw him start the journey.
Murdoch Finney says, time jump, Sal returns and marries Bruce Jenner.
Ha!
I don't know if that's going to happen, but, you know.
Yeah. A Sal appearance would be nice, but I don't see a Sal.
That ship sailed. I don't think we're going to get any Sal.
You never know.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right.
Anyway, folks, I think that's going to be all for us today. Real quick, Kevin Undercaro reached out. He's watching live, and he feels that we took his line about Betty going to school a sham out of context. When husband asked her, why are you still going to school, her response indicated it never had any meaning. Yes, her original intention was to do well, ascend, but the reality of death was too much reality. I'm a pretty trophy wife, all I was and ever will be. Therefore, Sally, make sure I look beautiful in that casket. That ties back to the she and Don only being good looking, and Don is cheering Sally later that she's more than that. Seeing Sally with the kids proves she is and will be. I don't think Don steps up to be a dad. Sally will do that.
Oh. That scene with Sally at the kitchen table.
Yeah, it's not fun
at
all.
That's a grim outlook.
Life's grim.
It could be.
Sterling Cates, where can the people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Sterling Cates and on a few other after shows here.
All right, Joe Braswell.
Oh, you can find me here. Oh, where can you find me? Oh, on Twitter and Instagram at Joe K. Braswell. You can also find me here in AfterBuzz for the season finale of Bates Motel, the season finale of Blacklist, and the season finale of a little show called Mad Men next week.
Yes. Joe Flip.
You can find me on the Twitters at Joe Filippo, J-O-E-F-L-I-P-O. And I will not be here next week for the finale because I'll be in Hawaii, and I have a job I have to do in Hawaii, and I'm very bummed. So this is my last Mad Men, and I'm astonishingly bummed out.
All right. It's been a pleasure serving with you, sir.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah. You can jump out a window.
No.
Yeah, that intro this whole time. It's really
dope. All right, you jokers. And you can find me on Twitter at Matt Lieberman. That's MattLieberman. You can also find me here on AfterBuzz TV doing the Orphan Black After Show, SourceFed Nerd, and LieberFriends.com. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next week. Good night.
Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.